So we'll sit together tonight for about 45 minutes or so, and then I might give just some short Dharma reflections post-retreat, see what comes. So most of you are quite seasoned meditators, so I try not to say too much because it is an opportunity to just enjoy the silence. But hopefully some of the pointers might be helpful for you to settle in tonight and enjoy some deeper insights, deeper peace, and build the confidence within yourself of trusting that your Dharma path is unfolding. So I always find it helpful at the beginning of a formal meditation practice just to bring my attention to what's happening here and now. I mean, that's quite an obvious thing to say, but often we don't pay attention to the present moment. We're straight away lost in some dialogue, inner dialogue. So if that's happening, bring attention to that. Using the body, which is always here and now, as an anchor. So just checking into what's happening for you in your own body, if you've got yourself a comfortable position that you can maintain. And wherever you might feel some tightness or tension or pain, just to relax into that, to breathe into that if you can. But if the body feels comfortable, enjoy that. Enjoy the stability that that brings and the opportunity to enjoy the peace that we can experience when the body is not hassling us with aches and pains. And as we know, the real culprit is generally the mind in meditation. So even if the body has got a few aches and pains, it's the mind that tends to make a bigger deal of it. And if it hasn't got any aches and pains, the mind will probably throw up some other distraction or drama. Obstacle. So, how to deal skillfully with the mind in meditation? We're not here to control it, to force it. Or repress it, suppress it. But we are here to discipline it in a way, in a gentle way, but in a strong way. So I always found during my last week's retreat, fortunately, I wasn't actually very interested in anything that the mind was throwing up. I'm actually quite bored with the inner chatter, dialogue, drama. So it helps just to start, see if you can actually lose interest in the thoughts, just for this next 10 minutes even. If you can maintain it for the whole 40 minutes, even better. But just to experience what it is to turn away this interest from your incessant chatter, inner dialogue. And when you do that, you may start to notice a natural inner quietude that's already present here and now. It's not something you have to create or manufacture. It's not something you have to imagine. Just a simple act of letting go of each thought, simply by losing interest in it, by recognizing, if you can, that most of our thoughts are pointless exercises that merely lead us to suffering. So we do have this power within us to drop it. And the incentive is to be happy, to experience peace, to taste calm. And the letting go of the thoughts, the disinterest doesn't happen through aversion to it or hating them, hating ourselves, so-called selves. But just recognizing that it's actually a futile exercise. That sends us round in circles, circle of samsara. So what do we find in this present moment really when we look intently and deeply and honestly we can maybe glimpse or taste the beginnings of that inner silence, the awareness, the spaciousness. And it helps to absorb into that if we can actually bring some interest to it, to really want to know, what is it within myself, within this experience of this being, that's actually here and now. And quiet. And we know it's often referred to as the clear sky of the mind, the blue sky, in which clouds, thoughts, feelings come and go. But if you look carefully at those things that come and go, you'll notice that they are of the same nature as a cloud. They have the substanceless quality to them, and they dissolve like clouds. And the sooner we can see each of those arisings, the quicker that cloud, the cloudy mind, will dissolve, and we can be left just here and now with this clear sky of awareness. Which is silence itself. But the mind is a trickster. The thinking mind is a trickster and will want to pull you into something that's has to be thought about, has to be figured out. And if this keeps happening, just notice the grasping that's taking place within your experience right now, within your mind, of holding on to something, whatever that may be. A hurt of the past, a fear of the future, a practical matter that's causing some distress or worry. Generally, the thinking mind will fall into one of these categories. We're not often sitting here thinking about how lovely we are or everything is, unless we're doing directed metta meditation, and that takes effort. So just notice the tendencies, the habitual tendencies of the mind to fall back into some negative spin. But have some compassion for yourself and for those conditioned processes. But at the same time, don't tolerate them. Because it's this very spin that's causing the suffering. But you have to see this, you have to really recognize that it's holding on to any negative thought or feeling, perception of yourself or others, of the world. We cling on to it as real, as solid. And then build up some very strong feelings, emotions, perceptions. And we actually forget they're actually clouds. So it's good to cut yourself some slack and allow it to dissolve. By turning your face, turning your attention to that which in you which doesn't have an opinion, which is just your natural awareness, your mindfulness. Your inner space. So if you need to move the body just to give it some relief, please do so. Or if you need to sit in a chair, do that as well. And although we're moving from one kind of formal meditation experience to some more Dharma reflection, we can still stay within a meditative space. And I'll offer some brief reflections, hopefully that might be of help for you in your meditation practice, and hopefully whatever comes out is wise. And if nothing comes out, that's fine too. Probably going to be wiser. But I've been reflecting in the last week on, obviously, the nature of my own mind, because that's all I've had to pretty much look at. And it's been a lovely time in the forest, and the weather's been sublime. Even though the nights have been cold, the days have been so a bit chilly, but the sun's been shining, the birds have been singing, the lyrebirds never stop singing, the currawongs have been visiting me for breakfast, and the little birds, I'm encouraging them. And it's been really delightful when I open my eyes and see what's out there. And even the wind hasn't been much of a wind element, has been quite still, so I've been quite blessed this last week, hiding down in my yurt and feeling quite blessed by the space that's on offer here at Santee. And I hope that all of you that have been staying here or about to stay here can really enjoy the beautiful peaceful surrounds, and that it may contribute to your deepening your practice. And while the external world has been quite lovely, the internal world hasn't been too bad either, I'm pleased to see. As I mentioned in the meditation, just looking at the nature of the mind and what it throws up for us, and reflecting on the actual nature of this mind. And it was funny, just in that process of wanting to say something, my mind went into complete blank, and I had something really profound to say, and it just disappeared, just like that. And that's an interesting reflection in itself, because it just reminds me of the nature of this thinking mind. And even though I might have just had something really profound to say, it kind of disappeared into nothingness. It may come back, it doesn't really matter, but I'll continue, hopefully, on the vein of the thought that I was trying to follow. And because I haven't been thinking much lately, it is a bit hard to move into, as you all know, those of you who've done retreats, coming out of it and then having to engage at the other conceptual level of talking, of thinking, of logging onto the computer and then getting back into the practical world, it's a little bit difficult. And that's only after 1 week, so I think I'll be a basket case after the Vassa for a while. I might need help, some explanation as to how to turn on the computer. But anyway, it is nice to switch off, so to speak, switch off the mind. But this mind has been interesting to investigate and look into and to understand more and more and to listen to Dharma talks myself and other wise people, helping to point to understanding what the hell's going on in this experience that we call ourselves, the body and mind. So when we were sitting tonight and just looking at our own thoughts, I wonder if we've ever actually contemplated, even outside the scope of what we read within Buddhism or other teachings, but really contemplated it for ourselves, what is the nature of this thinking mind? What is it really? And probably even more importantly than that, to ask ourselves who I think I am in relationship to this thinking process, because I think we can all agree, and depending on how deeply we understand it, we all kind of get that we're not our body. And if we're still identifying with our body as ourselves, we're in big trouble, because we know where that's heading. And, you know, it's, if we look in the mirror too often, we can be fooled into thinking that that reflection that we see, which we either despise or are in love with, so we're either narcissists or masochists, but just recognizing that it's a body, and contemplating what comes out of it, what goes into it, how it smells after a few days. We don't really want to identify with this as ourselves, as who we are, and we can experience the changing nature of this body as we're growing older and getting stiffer, fatter, greyer. We know it's not ourselves. It's clear within the Buddha's teaching of the non-self nature of the body, the form. But, you know, it fools us from time to time when someone slings an insult at it, or we get a pain or sick. And then it's really our body then. So the practice, obviously in meditation, is to keep uprooting this identification and attachment to this body as ourselves. And seeing how the mind really is the thing that attaches itself to the body and ultimately creates the bodily form. So the subtle experience of the mind is something that's trickier and slipperier and obviously more subtle. But, you know, we all have this sense within us that I am what I think I am. I am who I tell myself I am, or who other people tell me I am. Yet the funny thing is, it's never consistent, is it? So one day we're a wonderful type of person, skillful, confident, and another day we're completely useless or feeling terrible about ourselves or feeling like we're the worst person on the planet. So we do identify with our thoughts, but it's kind of absurd, because how can we be our thoughts? All the feelings, the emotions that these thoughts about ourselves give rise to. So we know, you know, we think we're wonderful, we feel great. We feel like a generous person, we feel lovely. I am a generous person. And people tell me how nice I am. But tomorrow it's a different story, because suddenly got some not so pleasant feedback, and then so I start to believe that actually I'm not a very nice person. I've got no patience. So today or for the next 10 hours I feel like a real loser. And then on and on it goes, and we might get into a neutral state. But this is where it's so important to look at how thoughts create or are the creator of ourselves. This sense of self. So if we really look into it right now, right here and now, this, you know, in a meditative kind of way, to go within and look at your own mind, whatever that is, can you actually even find a mind in there? Is there such a thing as a mind that you can show me, show yourself? But from this experience that we call mind, thoughts arise, thought forms. Thought formations, and then from those thoughts they create pictures in the mind or perceptions of good or bad, like or dislike, the whole dualistic world, the whole dualistic experience. So from this mind we create a thought, and from these thoughts we build a sense of self or ego. This is where the ego arises from. And we kind of have to keep working at it, don't we, to keep this sense of self going, because if you actually stop thinking, if you actually stop clinging and grasping to a sense of your own self, of who you really think you are, who you believe you are, what does this mind have to hold on to, have to believe? It kind of stops, doesn't it? So during my retreat, I kind of made a determination pretty early on not to feed the monster, which is myself. Because we read that there is no self, but Buddha pointed that out to us. But do we really truly operate from a sense of no self? Most of us don't, unless we're fully enlightened. So just determining, I actually don't want to feed this monster anymore. I just want it to, weaken, dissolve, and ultimately pass away, because it's not that I don't like myself, but I couldn't find myself that was consistent anyway, that was permanent, that was of any great substance, or any substance, I should say, like the clouds we were reflecting on. But I can create myself every moment, every mind moment, by thinking of myself. And if I stop thinking of myself, I disappear. And the question to ask is, is your sense of self something that you keep creating? Something that brings joy, or something that brings suffering? And maybe sometimes your sense of self does give you a high, but it's deluded, because when you look into it, it's not really true. It's the unreal sense that we've created. But it's the negative sense of self that's the real problem, isn't it? That causes great suffering. But even the high sense of ego and in superiority, it'll always flip. There's always the yin and the yang. So even when we feel great about how wonderful we are, nice we are, it won't last. So just really looking at how, if we stop feeding the monster, we can start to let go and dissolve this sense of self, this belief in a self that ultimately isn't real, and keeps us spinning on this cycle of samsara. And it's, it's very difficult to just tell the mind to stop. Stop thinking, stop creating my sense of myself and the world. Don't forget there's the world. We haven't even started talking about the creations of others that we obsess with as well, and who we think they are, bad person, good person, or the world. And we create that from moment to moment too. So I found it helpful in working with letting go of this self-view more and more, just to pay more attention, as I said in the meditation, to that natural state within me, within us all. It's not just mine, and I don't own it, and it's not me. It's not my other self, my higher self. It's just, it is what it is. As Ajahn Sumedho would say, it's the experience of emptiness, of stillness. And we can only really find it when the clouds part. So when the thinking starts to slow down, and if your thinking isn't slowing down, or if it's dense and heavy and consistent, it's useful then just to start looking at the gaps. There will be some gaps, I promise. And that you don't have to get those gaps through drugs or through extreme experiences like mountain climbing, but I guess that's why people do that sort of stuff, because it does stop the mind and it's pleasant and people get a high from it. But, there's side effects of extreme sports and extreme drugs and extreme other things. So how to do it naturally, which is what meditation is about trying to understand and access our natural state of mind that is peaceful, that is quiet, that is empty, that ultimately is what's going to take us towards liberation, or to liberation, if you can say that, if it's such a destination. But in the very moment of looking within to notice that there is something within us that we don't have to purchase or create or even practice, really, because we obviously have to practice letting go, but once we let go, there's something that's there naturally. So we don't have to strive to get it, because there's nothing to get if it's already there. It's just really turning to recognize it. And we only can recognize it when we're willing and I suppose committed. And maybe we've had enough suffering too. That can do it sometimes. We've just had a gutful. We bring that energy then and that interest into wanting to know, where is this place of stopping, of peace? And it's not really that far away. It's actually here and now, as the Buddha pointed to. The timeless Dharma, the thing that's unconditioned, that which is unconditioned, so it's not something, as I said, that is part of that conditioning process of the thinking world, of the samsaric world, of comings and goings. And there's so much of that. So there's a lot to let go of, isn't there? There's a lot to keep being willing to drop. But ultimately, even if we can drop a bit and taste a bit of freedom within ourselves, that can give us encouragement to go deeper and to strengthen that recognition within us and our determination to turn our attention to it, to turn our mindfulness to it, because it is the place of rest and peace. And the other stuff is really just endless dukkha, endless agitation, endless cycle and becoming. But then I think the danger can be sometimes as we start to think about the unconditioned, we start to think about how to get it, how to hold it, how to be it, how to identify with it, and then the whole cycle again starts. So it's just that willingness to rest into it without becoming tense or wanting to just hold on to it. So, you might have had those nice meditations where things have just really quietened down and you've dropped into a lovely space of inner silence and peace, and then all the next meditations is, how can I get that again? But you can't. That was then and this is now. So Whatever happens now, happens now. What happened then, happened then. But the process can still be a similar process of wise reflection and letting go, particularly of our neurotic thoughts. Because I think for Westerners, that's the biggest, maybe for everyone, I don't know, but speaking as a Westerner, I think our conditioning is, our biggest obstacle is our neurotic thinking. It's been so deeply ingrained that we have to think our way through life. We have to think our way to fix things, to plan things, to sort things. And particularly to sort ourselves out, we have to think about ourselves constantly. But I realize that this is exactly how we feed the monster. We have to think about ourselves constantly to keep creating ourselves. And if we stop thinking or keep putting that down, we actually will stop creating ourselves. And I'm all for letting, stopping that creation of myself, because it's not really that interesting and or enjoyable. And now I'm not saying that from a really a sense of self-hatred or anything, but it's just a bit over myself. But more importantly, it's more seeing into the delusion that there is no self other than what I keep creating with my mind. Pleased to say there are no others, but they're a little harder sometimes for me to let go of, because you get quite fixed views about and opinions about others and who they are. So working on letting go of this idea that there's you are who you know who I think you are, positive or negative. And recognizing that in that space of no self and that space of no others, there's a nice kind of interconnectivity that can arise, that we have a shared experience of something or nothing, or something that we're still investigating, at least. But we start from where we're at, don't we? Recognizing that the deluded sense of self is what's keeping us here on this cycle of samsara, of birth and death, both in, the so-called this lifespan, but also each moment, momentary experience of birth and death, of becoming ourselves and dying to ourselves in each moment, both figuratively and literally. I guess one of the things that comes up and can come up for people is the fear of God. What happens if I'm no one? If I lose my mind? I've got to keep working on it, and the mind will do that. Will keep, because you know the ego has to survive. It's determined to survive. But if we can keep looking into this flimsy structure that we call ourselves, or this ego that we keep building from moment to moment with each thought form, with each perception, with each feeling, and so on, when we see how flimsy it is, you know, the fear is just another thought. It's really nothing more than that. So one of the most useful teachings I found has been Ajahn Sumedho's pointing to just trusting in the awareness, and you know, you find that pointer from a lot of, or from most good teachers, and they'll say it in different ways, but you know, his trust in the awareness is really taking refuge in the Buddha, in the one who knows. Mm-hmm. Ajahn Chah would talk of that, to say just, they use the Buddha mantra as a way of stabilizing themselves in the knowing mind, in the awareness. And then once that Buddha mantra has stabilized, then you know the mantra's let go of, and one can just rest in the awareness. And I was reading a small chapter of Ajahn Chah's newly released book of Stillness Flowing, and one of the Mei Chis in that Mei Chi chapter was talking about how he told them to know the knowing in the knowing. Such a profound pointer. Or you could say to know the awareness in the awareness. Awareness right at awareness, as Upasika Ki talks about. Or consciousness knowing itself. So, you know, if we're able to start to recognize this awareness, this refuge of stillness, quietude, and not to start to identify it as me, oh, this is who I am, this is my new self, or even to start saying, you know, this is the permanent state, or any, not making any claims about it, just, because that's the thinking mind again, wanting to create something. So it's not thinking about awareness, it's just being awareness. Literally being in awareness. Which doesn't really have a... You can't put a name to it, even though I'm giving it a name of awareness. But what is this experience of just being present here and now? It's formless. It's we know we're experiencing life, and this presence, this timeless presence, brings us more and more into a real experience, a more real experience of life, as opposed to that flimsy thinking mind. It grounds us in the here and now, at least. So if we can start to recognize that as our refuge, become the Buddha, knowing the Dharma, and it's from this place that we can, you know, a few things can happen. One, we can actually breathe out and absorb into that peace, to become absorbed into that quietude within us, rest in it. And from that quietude comes clarity, comes concentration, natural concentration without not gritting our teeth concentration. A natural clarity and concentration can emerge, and the quieter we become, the clearer the water that we can see, and start to investigate. Not with our thinking mind again, no. She's having a rest. But just through the wisdom mind, and start to really investigate the nature of this awareness. But, you know, in the preliminary stages, most of the time we'll be just using most of our energy, just letting go of thoughts, letting go of thinking, perceptions. And, you know, that's what the whole path's pointing to, is that letting go, stop clinging, grasping onto thinking, feeling, senses, sense contact. Just keep going, keep dropping in each moment, but at least we know, you know, it's not a destination we have to arrive at. We're not, even though it's called a path, we can experience a little bit of that peace here and now, at least, and let that deepen and grow. The more we let go, the more peace. Well, Ajahn Chah said, I hope I don't misquote him, I might, and Jitendra can correct me, you let go a little, you get a little bit of peace. You let go a lot, you get a lot of peace. And you let go completely, and you'll get complete peace. So let's go for complete peace, ASAP. Is that his quote? He didn't say the last bit, by the way. So anyway, I'll offer this these short ramblings, reflections, and hope that they've been of some use for you tonight. Thank you.